The lights are on red. We're away.
Radio show about motorcycle road racing. My name is Jules Cisek, and I'm guest hosting for Bob Hayes, who's on vacation. It is April 18th, 2008, and this is show 123. So, in the news last week, I'm just going to defer to the excellent MotoGP Matters, Kropotkin Thinks blog, written by David Emmett. He seems to have the scoop early on pretty much everything that comes up in MotoGP, so I'm just going to defer directly to that. There's a post up that came up yesterday about Nicky Hayden possibly going to Ducati, which has been a rumor for some time now. And really actually makes a lot of sense if you think if you compare Casey Stoner and Nicky Hayden's backgrounds. They are very similar. They come from a dirt tracking background, so maybe whatever worked for Casey Stoner to be able to harness the wild horses of Ducati, perhaps Nicky Hayden has the same stuff, so that makes a lot of sense. Except that Nicky Hayden's supposedly signing a 2-year extension to his HRC contract. So, looks like silly season is starting real early this year. And the other post that David Emmett has made, it was also yesterday, is regarding the Shanghai round in China. This year's race, there's a rumor that this year's race might get canceled due to the political hubbub about Tibet. I'm not going to get into the specifics. I'm just going to give you guys a link to Kropotkin Thinks blog. Bottom line is there's a couple of sources saying that the round is canceled, but as far as I know, the teams are packing. We'll be talking to Liam Schubert in a little bit about the fact that he was at the Chinese consulate in Barcelona, running into people like Toby Moody, Randy Mamola. So unless they're going to pull the rug out last minute, it looks like the round is happening. Livio Supo of Ducati Racing, Corsa, has said publicly that they are going to be providing a new frame for their other riders, that being Marco Melandri, Tony Elias, and Sylvain Guintoli. The current bike is running a very stiff frame that Casey Stoner favors, but I think maybe hindering some of the other riders. So that's an interesting move for Ducati. Well, not really. I mean, they're developing the bike, and some of this development will fork off into different directions depending on the rider needs. But the most interesting thing about what Ducati's doing is that there's talk about bringing Troy Bayliss and Max Biaggi from World Superbike to, I don't know, do a couple laps on the bikes, give some tips. It's kind of hard to imagine how these guys who are in the mid of a their own season and probably don't want to risk injury, that they would ride the bike balls out and then be able to fix whatever problems that riders like Marco Melandri, Tony Elias, and Sylvain Guintoli have not been able to figure out for 6 months now. But we do know that in 2006, Troy Bayliss came back from World Superbike and got on the Desmos Adici and handily won the race in Valencia, which is definitely going down as a legendary feat. So, you know, these guys obviously are capable of hopping on a new bike and doing well. Biaggi showed that in the other direction when he went to World Superbike and won his first race. The first time he went, his first season in World Superbike, he won his first race in Qatar. So we'll see how that situation develops, and if we get any more news here at MotoGP OD, we'll follow up next week. So we had a great race in Estoril, Portugal. Actually, a couple of great races. Quickly, to summarize, Jorge Lorenzo took his first win in the MotoGP class. He has now been on the podium three times. He has now had three pole positions in a row, and now he's got his win. He's had a first, a second, a third, which actually gets him in a 100% tie with Danny Pedrosa, who also has one win, one second, and one third, which is pretty unusual. Jorge won the race handily, and with some very, very impressive riding. It wasn't like any luck involved. He worked hard for it. He put some masterful passes on both Danny Pedrosa and especially on Valentino Rossi, going through the chicane, the tight chicane, uphill chicane towards the end of the track, which is one of the signature places in Estoril. And that was while they were fighting for the lead, and that was a very ballsy pass, and he made it stick. Valentino Rossi was not able to keep up with him, had to settle for third place after getting passed by Danny Pedrosa. Valentino Rossi actually ended up finishing the race a full 12.7 seconds back from Lorenzo, although I'm pretty sure that once both him and Pedrosa were away, he probably didn't want to push it anymore. The race did start in a, probably the worst kind of way weather-wise, as the riders were out on the siding lap. Rain started to just barely drizzle. That's the kind of situation where you know the rider's not going to opt for a rain tire or even a cut slick. They will stay on slicks, but they will be riding on a slick track. And sure enough, when the race started, it was really an edge of the seat affair as the riders were pushing very, very hard on unknown grip levels. But anyway, the fourth place was taken by Colin Edwards, who benefited from Andrea Dovizioso crashing out and Nicky Hayden crashing out in front of him. But Colin was in a good pace, and he's always done well at this track. I was actually surprised to not see him battling further up front. That was kind of disappointing. John Hopkins finished fifth, about 6 seconds back from Edwards. And then Casey Stoner finished sixth. He had a very tricky race. He went as low as 11th. He had a poor starting position as well. And he was down at 11th and was able to fight his way up to sixth. And that included a couple of laps where he had to fumble with some Dorna equipment. I believe it was the onboard, one of the onboard cameras, possibly the camera that shows you the pilot's view, and it kept falling out the side of the bike, and on the straight at Estoril, he was constantly trying to wedge that stuff back into the fairing. It was just kind of unbelievable that at close to 200 miles an hour, he's fumbling with some electronics that are hanging over the side. But, you know, he did manage to put it away, and then he started to get some rhythm back, managed to score a sixth place, which is actually a good result for him at Estoril. It's not a strong track for Ducati. It's not a strong track for Casey Stoner. Seventh was James Toseland. First time out at Estoril ever in his life, so a great result there. And that means that the four Yamahas ended in the top seventh. Pretty astonishing. Eighth place, Chris Vermeulen managed to beat his teammate Loris Caparossi by just over 2 seconds at the end of the race. They had a good fight for a while with Casey Stoner. Casey Stoner got past them. They had to settle for fighting each other, and Shinya Nakano, who finished 10th, just about a second back from Loris. So that was our top 10. And then Alex De Angelis, the other Gresini rider, Nakano's teammate, was long way back, another 20 seconds back from Nakano. And he was racing with Tony Elias, who managed to finish 12th in ahead of Factory Ducati of Marco Melandri, who is still struggling. And some rumors about Marco possibly going back to Gresini next year, where he did very well in the Honda. We'll see how that turns out. 14th place, Sylvain Guintoli. 15th, Randy Depunier, who ran off the track in usual Randy Depunier way, but rather than giving up, he did manage to get the bike back on the track and finished the points. He did get a point. And last, by another 12 seconds from Randy Depunier, Anthony West on that last Kawasaki, and he's struggling. This guy has probably lost all his confidence at this point. So we had Nicky Hayden and Dovizioso crash their bikes on the 12th and 13th lap, respectively. And actually in the same corner. It is quite likely that there was a little bit more moisture in that corner than at the other parts of the track. They both had very similar types of crashes. They lost the front end. They're both on Hondas, Michelins. Not a lot of variables there. It seems pretty much like they were both pushing and paid the price in that one corner. That leaves the World Championship standings with Danny Pedrosa and Jorge Lorenzo tied for first place. Like I mentioned before, it is an absolute tie. Normally, when you have the same number of points, you count your first positions, then your seconds, then your thirds, then your fourths, and so on. But with only three races and these riders finishing first, second, and third each, they are absolutely tied. Third place, Valentino Rossi with 47 points. He's managed to finish on the podium the last two races. And I don't think we've seen really what Valentino Rossi is capable of yet with his package with the Yamaha and the Bridgestones. Yamaha is definitely by far the most impressive of the bikes on the grid this year. And We haven't been really to a track where the Bridgestone gamble should pay off. So we'll see how that goes. A lot of people are already saying he made a mistake. He could have won two races by this point if he had been on the Michelins. I'm still holding out to see. Well, I'll be holding out to the end of the season. But I think we'll find out sooner than that. Then reigning world champion Casey Stoner is in fourth position. And then James Toseland, Loris Caparossi, John Hopkins, Colin Edwards, Andrea Dovizioso, and Nicky Hayden round out the top 10. Next race is coming up on May 4th in China, if it happens. And that should be an interesting race for to see Valentino Rossi maybe take advantage of the Bridgestones for the first time. So we'll see how that goes for him. And obviously we'll have a few shows before then. We'll talk more about China and do a proper preview. We also had a great 250cc race just prior to the MotoGP race. Alvaro Bautista pretty much took off and won the race. It was never really challenged. But behind him, there was a lot of great racing going on. Some of the incidents I wanted to mention were there was a great battle between Mattia Pacini, Hiroshi Aoyama, Yuki Takahashi, and later Thomas Luthi, who came surging from a poor start and ended up finishing in fourth place. He was running a pace, basically at the same pace as Alvaro Bautista, but there was no way he could catch Bautista after a poor start. And second place and third place were Marco Simoncelli and Mika Kallio, who Mika Kallio was actually part of the group fighting with Hiro and Yuki and Mattia for a while, but he managed to pull away. And Marco Simoncelli, who was had quite a lead in second and was pretty much on his own for a long time, suddenly was being caught by Mika Kallio. And on the last lap, Mika Kallio was able to close up the gap really very close and had a good drive out of the final corner. And it looked like he was going to steal the second spot on the podium from Simoncelli, who has never been on the podium before, by the way. And there was a little bit of an incident that occurred there where Marco Simoncelli clearly blocked Mika Kallio on the straight by running diagonally across, and there was some contact. Mika had to pull back, or definitely was slowed down, lost some momentum from the contact, and I'm sure he is very unhappy about that move. But it is racing. It's one of these quote-unquote racing incidents that was obviously an aggressive move from Marco Simoncelli, who had a great race and was not about to give up second place on the finish line. Hard to say you could fault the guy, although it's definitely an iffy maneuver. The other thing I wanted to mention was Mattia Pacini. His crash was actually due to contact with Hiro Aoyama after the race. There was a camera in the Pacini garage, Pacini being until this point the leader of the championship. So all eyes and cameras were on him, and he didn't look very happy. But as we were watching, Hiro came over and looked like he was apologizing to him. So for the incident, I thought that showed tremendous class, and it's great to see that kind of sportsmanship in the very competitive 250cc class. I have to admit, I did not watch the 125cc race, so I will not comment on it. Maybe we'll do a little bit of a review, season review, next week when there's no other races to cover. And with that, I'm just going to jump into our phone call with Liam Schubert. We have Liam with us. How you doing, Liam?
Hey, everybody. Hey, Jules.
Tell us where you are. You're somewhere in Barcelona, right?
Yeah, it's about 2:15 in the afternoon. I just spent the previous 4 hours in the Barcelona consulate, Chinese consulate in Barcelona. Spent 4 hours getting my visa for the Shanghai race, which took a little longer than I expected, but this is Spain, so instead of everything coming with a grain of truth, everything comes with a grain of hurry up and wait.
So that...
I think I've never been at such a crummy embassy before, as far as you've got a room that's 15 feet by 30 feet, and it's raining outside, and you've got two single-file lines outside on the street waiting to go down a little narrow stairway and cram into this room. And you couldn't even exit the room and go up the stairs without pushing your way through people. I mean, it was complete standing room only. Everyone's smelling weird because it's been raining. And it just took forever. I mean, I stood in line for about 2.5 hours. Then I had to go away for 30 minutes while they processed some more paperwork and then come back and wait in line for an hour so I could pick up my passport again. And it was just... it's just a hassle.
So,
but anyway,
that actually brings me to the first question I wanted to ask you, which is, are you going to China?
Yeah, hell yeah. I go everywhere.
I know, but...
why wouldn't I?
You haven't heard the rumors about the China round being canceled?
Yeah, well, this might be the last race. If it is, I'm going to enjoy it. Unfortunately, I didn't get to extend my trip there like I have in previous years. I normally like to take a few days after the race to kind of see the city again and watch how it's changing. I like to eat the food. I definitely like the discos there. You can really live like a king for a small amount of money. So it's a neat kind of flip, because here in Barcelona I live like a pretty quiet, small life. You know, I eat pasta and, you know, I don't go big or extravagant. But over there, you know, the value of the dollar's flipped so...
yeah.
So immensely that you can just think, well, all right, I'm in China, and there's no rules, which is always kind of fun. You know,
the rumor is that the this round might get canceled.
Why?
Political stuff.
Jeez, I don't even know where that rumor came from. But
well,
as far as I know, everybody's going there.
Okay.
Too much in motion to try and cut it. I can't imagine how many hundreds of thousands of euros have been spent already to get everything over there.
Yeah, there was, you know, just the usual sources, GP1, a couple other websites.
You know, GP1's been reporting some oddball stuff lately. And I know the guy that reports for GP1, and he's normally got his head screwed on straight. His name is Alberto Cané. Nice guy. But yeah, I don't know where all this information from GP1's coming from.
So we'll be watching that closely. Obviously, that'll be very interesting. I think just all the, you know, obviously all the political stuff regarding Tibet.
This is true. It's definitely been a change from last year. Despite the Olympics going on in China later, it's become more difficult for U.S. citizens to get the visa to go to China for some reason. That's what they explained to me at the embassy this morning. I said, yeah, you got to do it from here, and you have to do it this way, and it's going to cost more because you're not European, and blah, 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 and I don't know. I don't quite understand how the big corporation governments move. I'm just happy that I got the piece of paper glued into my passport, And this is the oddball thing. Only China gives you a visa that accepts 4 places in your passport. Normally, each place is you get a different stamp when you go into a country.
Yeah.
They just glue it in on one of the pages and ruin one of your pages completely, which is kind of crap, I think. anyway, enough about trials and tribulations.
Well, actually, let's talk about other
Maybe
trials
and
tribulations.
Maybe if Chinese government workers listening, I should say that, oh, I love the embassy. It's fantastic.
Let's talk about the other trials and tribulations, those being those of the Ducati factory team and their satellite team.
I can get into a little bit. Certainly not everything, because my perspective is slightly different, and some of the information I have is not for public consumption.
Sure. I'm actually really interested in hearing about this new chassis that's supposedly being developed.
That's the first I've heard of it.
apparently, Livio Suppi has said that they are considering looking into a softer chassis for the other three riders because that's one of the complaints that like Melandri has had, is that this
chassis
is too stiff.
More stiff?
No, less stiff.
Ah, that would be pretty interesting, I guess.
Boy, I'm really giving you some interesting news now, aren't I? You're not going to China, and you're getting a new chassis.
Well, for me, it's the same. I mean, I can't keep track of every single piece they're making for the bike. I basically show up, and they're like, here's the new stuff. And generally, I know about it before it shows up, but I don't know. If they want to show up with a new chassis and test it, we'll see what happens. I know that we've done every configuration of the bike. Every weekend, it seems, and what we have right now is not working with our riders. So I wouldn't be surprised to hear that we're getting something new like that. It's not such a big deal, though. I mean, when Ducati says, oh, we're building a new chassis, you know, you look at other factories, they're popping out chassis every couple of events. You know, we're on a testing day, Kawasaki could say, okay, we've got 4 different chassis to test, or HRC could say the same thing. And
That's true. We're talking
about minute differences that you or I probably wouldn't be able to tell just from looking at it, but the rider might be able to feel it when they're that close to the limit.
Yeah, makes sense. But in general, I think that there's definitely a lot of, motion about trying to fix whatever the issue is for the other riders, because there's also that rumor about Bayless and Biaggi coming to help out with the development of the bike.
Yeah, I heard that too. I don't know if they could develop it or give meaningful input with just an afternoon or a day of riding. I don't know if contractually if they could do it, if they're bound to ride Pirelli tires all race. I mean, all season. I don't know. I spoke with a couple of guys on the factory team about it, and I'm like, are you guys going to be working with them if they come and test? And they said, no, probably it's going to be the test team, which would be the same bike that Chaz Davies tested in Mugello. And it's like you can consider it the next step Ducati, because they're always testing pieces that are created before we get them. You know, they'll make something new, and then they'll test it on the test bike, and they'll check it for the lifespan of the piece, like how well it works, you know, if it really does provide an advantage, etc. It's difficult to say, because Bayless came in at the end of 06 and wiped everybody on a bike that he hadn't ridden all year, or in a few years, because he'd been on the Honda for a little bit.
Right.
He definitely has the ability to get on a bike and go. And I would feel the same way about Biaggi, that even though they're not racing in GP, they're still quite sharp. If not, you know, some of the sharpest guys out there that aren't racing in GP right now. I don't know. I think everybody's blowing everything a little bit out of proportion so far. I mean, sure, the slow 3 Ducati riders haven't been doing as well as we expected. Casey's doing about as well as can be expected of him. I think we're seeing that the number one place a little heavier than any other number.
Yep.
And I think from a personal standpoint, and this is just my opinion, there's a lot of added pressure going for your second championship. I mean, we saw it with Hayden. Once you win something, you know it's attainable. You know it's yours. You know you got it. It's yours right now, and you do everything you can to defend it. And so things that weren't really an issue before, you know, when you had nothing to lose, it can kind of get bigger. You know, and you can say, oh, my God, you know, I got to get this.
Absolutely.
Plus, you know, another factor that I haven't seen anybody look at is that when you are, you know, the hope of the factory and you're their main guy and everyone's working to keep the championship there and you see the rest of the riders not providing the same kind of support by at least being in the mix, you got to wonder, well, how come they keep saying there's something wrong with the bike? Is there something wrong with the bike? You know, and you might start to question yourself.
Interesting, yeah, yeah.
You know, I haven't heard that. For me, it was one of the first things I thought of.
I think that it's still very early in the season. We had two rounds that are very, incompatible with the Ducati anyway. So it's not like, and the one that was compatible, he ran away with the race. So, you know, it's...
And that itself was an odd race. I mean,
yeah,
one
exactly.
It was at night. Mighty cold temperatures, and it's a strange track. You know, it's not your standard, you know, flowing with yellow style track. So you've got a night race, and then you've got two races that traditionally have not been good for Bridgestone or Ducati. And you know, except for Rossi waving the Bridgestone flag, Bridgestone really didn't make an impact in those races.
No.
To the degree that they could have. And I don't know. I think there's definitely going to be some more change throughout the season. People are heralding, it's going to be Lorenzo's year, or Pedrosa's in the hunt, or Rossi's in the hunt. And the fact is, they'd be in the hunt any year, whether the tires were perfect or the tires were not perfect. I mean, we saw both Michelin riders last year, Pedrosa and Rossi, you know, fighting for the podium consistently. And, you know, Stoner just had such a perfect meld with that bike. Everything was going easy for him, so to speak, that he just steamrolled everybody. This year, definitely it's harder. I'd say the biggest change that I've noticed is that Michelin has really stepped up their game, invested a lot of money and a lot of resources. There's a lot more personnel around. And this, more than anything, I think will have the greatest impact on the season.
I think actually the fact that the last year started differently in terms of rounds. Maybe he's not going to have a problem when we get to the tracks where he was fast last year, like China and, you know, whatever, and beyond. He might actually be suffering a little bit from the fact that the first three races were tricky for him.
Well, it could be. I mean, this is why we watch the races.
Yeah.
Everybody has good material. I mean, it was obvious that by Valencia last year, Honda had gotten fast enough to go even Steven with the duck. The Yamaha is definitely working. I don't think anybody alive could say that the Yamaha is the slow bike now.
Oh, man. It is amazing what a turnaround the Yamaha guys did.
As far as taking a step back, I would say that it looks like Kawasaki and Suzuki, because they've had to revert to using hybrid 07-08 bikes, you know, either with an 08 engine and an 07 chassis or so on and so forth. They're still kind of figuring out exactly what's the best direction for their development.
Speaking of Kawasaki, I've listened to the YouTube video of the Screamer engine, but
what does it sound like? Doesn't it?
I can't imagine what it sounds like in real life. I'm sure you heard it by now, right?
Oh yeah, I heard it in Sepang. I've heard it every time it's tested, but I've been at the racetrack. It's not something you can miss. You know, if you're standing on pit wall and you hear this screech come out of the far corner, and it's like, and as it's blasting down the straight, you see the front wheel lifting off the ground every time the bike changes gears.
You said all the way up to sixth, right?
Yep.
This was like in your Liam's Wild Ride thread.
Yeah, that's you'll amazing. See the bike wheeling in sixth. I don't know if you'll see that in the future. You know, they might tone it down. But right now, that's what it's been doing, which is kind of it's beautiful to watch.
Very cool.
I don't know if it's going to be the milestone that people are saying it's going to be, but we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, Hopkins definitely has what it takes. If, I think if you gave him a serious enough weapon that was head and shoulders above everyone else, I think he'd be able to use it, you know, and put on a fine display if he had such a bike. Right now, I don't think the bike is quite at the same level as the other factory machines.
Right. You have time to talk about the Astral race in general?
Sure. What do you guys want to know?
Well,
it was cold, man. It was cold and windy, and the weather sucked.
Yeah, it was
I mean,
very
from
interesting
when I arrived on Tuesday afternoon, I mean, the place was socked in. It was raining when I left Barcelona, and it was storming when I arrived in Lisbon. And it seemed to rain off and on throughout the weekend. Just really cold, nasty weather. It was kind of a neat flip, though. You look at the Friday morning practice when it was rainy and crappy, and all the Bridgestone guys were in front.
Yeah.
And then as the track dried out for Friday afternoon and on Saturday, all Michelin guys were in front, except for Rossi,
right,
pretty much being the only Bridgestone guy capable of running towards the front. It was like, I don't know, 7 out of 8 or 9 out of 10, whatever, were all Michelin, and the last guys were all Bridgestone. So I think we all knew at Jerez that this was going to be a really difficult track for Bridgestone riders. You know, and that just underlines the importance of the tires, you know, how critical a piece they are in the equation.
What are good tracks for Bridgestone this year, you think?
Pretty much the rest of them. I mean, if you asked me last year what's going to be the weakest tracks for Bridgestone, I would have said immediately these two tracks.
Right.
You know, I don't think we do too badly at any of the other tracks. And that's good. It shows that both manufacturers are right up there. As far as how good Michelin's going to be at the rest of the tracks, we'll have to wait and see. But obviously both giants are working hard because they each want to win.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that the Michelin technician that used to work directly with Rossi is now on Lorenzo's side of the garage, and I would imagine that, you know, all the main push of this company is going to be behind Lorenzo, because if you wanted to beat Rossi and you wanted to go tire for tire after all the drama last year, you'd say, all right, we're going to take your brand new teammate on the exact same bike, on the same team, and we're going to make him beat you.
Yeah.
So
you far,
know, Lorenzo's definitely
been
one to watch, and so is Pedrosa.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, I think Lorenzo's more of a surprise because we kind of knew that Pedrosa was on the charge starting last season. I mean, Lorenzo really, I think, surprised a lot of people just how powerful he started
this
season.
Yeah, it actually surprised me with the consistency. I knew he was going to be fast. I knew he was going to take race wins this year. He surprised me, I think, by how focused and mature he's been overall. And I've already won a gentleman's bet that he wouldn't crash out in the first three races. So, I mean, my personal predictions about him are coming in. You know, there's definitely some hubbub in the paddock about him. You know, when I step back, though, I go, well, he's one of the young guns that's capable of making a huge impact. I think the Vizioso's waiting, not because he wants to, but his impact will come down the road. Pedrosa's always going to be fast. Rossi is fast. As of right now, though, I don't think anybody's been able to put the same grip on a session the way Casey's been able to, where he'll go out and on his second or third lap out, you know, he'll put 3 seconds on everybody, which he's done on more than one occasion. And when you see that much time, you know, as the gap between the next riders, you just go, holy smokes. With no time out there, you know, not running around for 20 laps tuning the bike, but just going out, and bam, 3 seconds. The whole paddock just kind of takes a collective breath and goes, holy shoot, we got a lot of work to do. You know, it's quite impressive.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody should count him out, whether or not, you know, people say, oh, last year with the bike or the tires or whatever.
I don't think anyone's saying
he's a force to be reckoned with. And I th- think this year more than any other. You know, we say this every year. Wow, this year, you know, there's more guys capable of fighting for the race win this year, but I think this year we're going to see it.
And, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's good. I'm happy about it. Not so happy that I haven't been fighting for race wins at this point, but, you know, it's kind of a kick in the teeth to be putting in this much work and not to see the results, you know, because basically I can't affect what the rider does on the bike, but the framework and the structure behind the rider, you know, we're definitely responsible in part for the results. So when I see bad results, it makes me think, I'm not doing my job, or I could be doing more. You know, and everybody on the team's kind of feeling this way, which is good to see. You know, it kind of, you can get bonded in two ways. You can either get bonded by success, where everyone's like, all right, we won a race, we know what it takes to win a race, we're going to keep working at this level. Or you could be at the exact opposite end of the grid and go, shit, we're getting our asses kicked here. We gotta get whatever the problem is, we gotta fix it.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the big question, actually. I always want to ask you, but I'm kind of scared to ask you, is, you know, the confidence level of the team, has it stayed, you know, positive in general?
Well, I can't speak for the rest of the guys on the team because I don't really speak with them too much. Normally I'm either buried in my truck or buried in my computer, and, you know, I go into the garage to watch all the sessions and, check in with the chief mechanic.
You've been showing your face all over the place. I mean, you were even on the grid in some photo of, which rider.
The first thing I thought was, man, I look fat. I look fat. Anyway. Yeah, I guess this year I wouldn't be the guy that's out on the grid, but we don't have a lot of people, so I have to go out there. It's nice to see the start of the race, the preparation, 15 minutes of staging time on the grid, from the grid. But, you know, in reality, it's just a different perspective. It doesn't change anything, and it's not really doing anything other than, you know, I get to say good luck to my riders that much closer to the race.
Right.
From my point of view, you know, as soon as the bike leaves the garage to go out for the race, then pretty much everyone's just in a holding pattern. You know, it's such a strange race in Estoril with it drizzling during the opening laps of the race, the first half of the race, and then some, and drizzling in different parts of the circuit. I mean, every 2 seconds we were outside of the garage feeling the intensity and changing the setup of the bike, the spare bike, in case the rider had to come in and make a switch.
Right.
Really meant like a stressful first half of the race.
Man, I was stressed out, dude. I was sitting on the edge of the bed. I was like, "Oh my god!" Like, nobody was letting off. People were, you know, pushing it.
Yeah, you guys can't see the feed quite as clearly as I can because, you know, the monitors we have in our garages, everybody gets like a crystal clear feed.
Right.
I remember watching the 125 race and seeing somebody's fairing flapping and going, "Oh, that screw's missing," you know, or I can see things that are wrong with the bike that you won't pick up on the internet or on the feed that they show on TV. You could really see a lot of precipitation in certain places. I think that's what caught Nicky out and just really made for what's already a slippery track. It made it even that much more dangerous and uncomfortable because, you know, your visor's always covered with mist and it's just crummy.
Yeah. No, I mean, so I don't know anything about the Hayden crash. There was very little said about it except that he stormed off and didn't even go to his garage, which is very unusual for him.
I don't know about that. I watched the crash because we saw it in the garage. It looked like a front end tuck when he was pushing. You know, he was trying to make up time. He was moved up into fourth place, and he was trying to catch up to the top three. You know, just a fairly standard crash, I guess. It wasn't like a mega bike flipping, you know, hailstorm of parts. It was just, you know, slipped off track and then you're out of the race.
I'm just saying that it's out of character for him not to go back to the garage.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about
whatever.
That.
Yeah, is that, yeah.
Yeah.
Let him be.
I got enough problem.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was a very, very exciting race. Estoril is always a very cool place to watch. The pass that Lorenzo did on Rossi was fantastic.
On the outside. Fantastic.
On the outside.
When I saw him make that move, I just said, holy shit, this kid's got balls.
Yeah.
And then he made it stick, and I thought, all right, he's in there. I thought he was either going to go off, slide out trying, or there was going to be more of a collision between the two of them. But I think Rossi knew that at that point, it wasn't the time to go toe-to-toe. And, he got some good points out of the race. And his day is not done. We've got, 18 races this year.
Oh,
that's a long time, and a lot of stuff can happen. And I think more people expected stuff to happen last year, and Stoner just kept getting stronger as the year went on. I think this year we're going to see people getting stronger as the year goes on.
And I think that, there's way too much talk about him, people saying, well, he could have had like 2 wins by now if he only stayed on Michelin. And that's BS, because I think that maybe he would have had those wins, but I think I still think that we don't know about the choice being a bad choice, because, now is when we're going to get to the really good Bridgestone rounds.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out.
Yeah, and the endurance part of the series will come up when we get 6 races in 8 weeks.
And exactly. And then there's the weather's going to get hotter, and Bridgestones seem to have worked much better in the heat last year. So
everybody that's saying Rossi would have been better off staying with Michelin, everybody that's saying, oh, he could have won races by now if he'd stayed with Michelin, these are all armchair quarterbacks. Bottom line is that only Rossi makes the decision, because only he is the one that's riding on the tires, and he's the one that needs to feel comfortable and confident in the package he's got. And everybody speculated last year, he wanted the exact same tires as Stoner, because he wanted to go head-to-head on the same material with Bridgestone. And, everybody's just making these speculations. Bottom line is Rossi wanted Bridgestone for a reason. Maybe he hasn't disclosed that, or it'll come out in a book later or whatever. But he's on Bridgestone now.
What if I haven't tried it, too?
He seems to be quite happy with it. I'm sorry?
What if I haven't tried Bridgestone's next book?
Now you're breaking up.
Never mind. The other race that was really excellent was the 250 race. I really enjoyed that one.
It was kind of strange to be the 250 race before the GP race and have the 125s after. A change. Yeah, 250 is a good class. I don't think people really realize how good these bikes are and how much of a handful they are, because it used to be it was a 250, you get on it and you ring it out. They're so powerful now, with the factory Aprilias and KTMs making 405 horsepower, and they weigh so little. I think it's strange we're seeing more high sides out of the 125s than the 250. It just shows that the 250 guys are good, and the bikes are great. Really, really beautiful little machines.
Yeah. I actually wanted to give a shout out to Hero, if you see him. That was very gentlemanly of him to walk over and talk with.
Joe's always been a class act.
He's awesome.
With a really good personality, and I think he's a lot different from other riders that I know. And that he's got a lot of humility and just a really great person. I had dinner with him a few weeks ago here in Barcelona, and the kid's just got his head screwed on right. It's the long and the short of it. He's not a kid anymore. He's past 25, 26 now. He's definitely done all he can to prepare himself. I hope he gets a shot to go to GP next year.
So we were just talking about Hero before we got split up. It's super, super classy of the guy to walk over to Pacini's garage and say, hey, sorry about that.
My bad.
Yep. Very cool. As opposed to, I'm not necessarily going to blame the guy, but the Simoncelli Calio thing at the very end. What's your take?
No comment.
Oh, come on.
I'm just going to go no comment.
Just come on.
No. No, because I know Calio's chief mechanic really well. He's my former chief mechanic for 2 years and one of my best friends in the paddock. And I don't want to say anything either way.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't really remember it. I don't really remember it.
One bike going across the straightaway. Okay. Well, I won't bug you about that one then.
Yeah, we'll just cut that thing out.
You want me to cut it out completely? I'm going to leave it in, dude.
All right. Hey, MotoGPod listeners, if any of you have Mega Man ZX3 or ZX4 for Game Boy Advance, mail it to Jules, because I want some copies of that game.
Hey, and we'll check it out with my sons.
Yeah. Ask your kids if they've got these old video games. They're a couple years old for...
What is it? Mega Man what?
ZX3 and ZX4.
Okay. All right. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of little consoles.
I've been spending a lot of time in airports lately, and the Nintendo's been getting more playtime than the PlayStation.
Battery life better?
Yeah, I just, I'm enjoying it. It's a fun little system. For cool. People that get stuck in airports and whatnot, sometimes I don't feel like reading. I just want to zone out in a video game. I use the PSP more for movies because the screen definition is great.
Yeah, yeah.
But for just sheer childlike enjoyment of playing video games, the Nintendo gets the nod.
Nice.
Superior system. I like that it's more compact and I enjoy it.
So I only have one more question for you, which is what watch are you wearing today?
What's the question?
What watch are you wearing today?
I'm wearing my titanium Casio ProTrek PRG 110.
Nice.
You can see photos of it on the Ride on 2 thread.
All right, I'll put a link up for that. There's been a lot of talk about watches on Ride on 2 lately, so.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's fun. People will justify and not justify the price. But everybody's got a hobby, and I don't know. I'm a little bent that I can't be collecting motorcycle parts. I think I'll be getting back more into that because there's some pieces I want for one of my bikes, and I think it's about time that I started sourcing them. I'm looking for 8-inch white wall Continental tires, so if anybody has a hookup for Continental tires, let me know. 8-inch white wall, 8x3.5, big white walls, not little thin strips, but, a couple thick inches of white wall.
Classy.
That's a coffee grinder in the background you can hear.
Yeah.
Well, I saw Randy Mamola, a couple guys from Showa this morning. Everybody was down at the embassy.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, what a nightmare.
When are you guys leaving?
We're leaving on Monday, the 28th, I believe.
Okay.
And then arriving on the 29th. We've got a free afternoon on the 29th, and then Wednesday morning we start setting it up. It's going to be kind of a shame because if this is our last race there, they definitely have the paddock to be envious of. I mean, the garages are huge, and they've got these little, slightly separated offices that are surrounded by water, and they're up on stilts, and it's just a really beautiful infrastructure for the paddock. You go to other garages, and they're cramped and tiny in comparison. I mean, Laguna definitely seems really small, so just no violence. It just shows the modern tracks know what it takes. So tracks like Turkey had a nice big garage. I really miss Turkey. Not Istanbul or, not parts away from the circuit, but as far as a racetrack, that's a really good racetrack, and I was kind of sad to see that race go off the calendar.
I think that's pretty much universal, that feeling.
Yeah. I'm still waiting to see if we get lucky and they announce we go back to Welcome in South Africa and go to Rio. But
is there any talk about South Africa?
No.
Yeah.
Unfortunately not.
See, I would really like to see the GP series go there. Big time. I think that
I
was a
go,
cool
just because
track.
Those are continents that we're missing in the international race
yeah.
tour. We gotta hit as many continents as possible.
We actually talked about that a couple of shows ago. Bob and I were talking about that. You know, what happened to South America? What happened to Africa? It's not like those guys don't like racing or don't like motorcycles, you know?
Well, definitely Rio is a monster mega party.
Yeah.
For everyone involved, the fans and the race teams. I don't know about Africa. I don't have any experience. No one's really talked to me about it from the paddock. So I'm assuming that, you know, it was one of those Dell things where you just go from your hotel or wherever you're staying, go to the racetrack and work the race, and there's not much else to it.
That's right. You've never been to those tracks because you started in 2005, and they were already off the calendar by then.
Yeah. So those are two targets I definitely have. I don't think I'd go there on vacation, you know, to South Africa just to visit the racetrack if there was no GP going on. But, you know, they're so far off. You know, if you look on a map and go, man, for us to get to South Africa, that's quite a haul. You got to cross the entire length of Africa.
Yeah.
Same thing. To get to Rio, you got to cross the Atlantic and get down into South America. And
yeah, but then again, you guys,
listening, Dorna?
You go to Australia. You go. You know.
Yeah, that's pretty far off. That is pretty far off. That is pretty far off.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not Rio.
It's not the party. Not the same kind of party.
That's all everyone tells me about when I ask them about Rio. I go, what was the racing like? What's the track like? Oh man, the party, you got to see it, blah, 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 blah. Every night, blah, 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 blah. I don't even know if they have a race there, though, based on what everyone's told me.
Too funny.
Yeah. I don't know. I think definitely the season's got off to a funky start. We see some new challengers for race wins. And then now the meat of the season's going to start. And
We've got a bona fide tie, don't we? We have absolutely nothing separating the top two guys because they each won a race, they each had a second place, and they each had a third place.
You can't ask for much more than that. So I will take this moment to give a special shout-out. I think Lorenzo is doing a hell of a job. And, you know, behind the scenes, he's got a fantastic group of people that are really hustling to keep him on the pace. Shown good maturity. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable to come in and get three pole positions in your first three races, and then to podium in each one is you know, yet another amazing accomplishment. I think
for a rookie,
it's
on insane.
Fire right now.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, yeah, I think
he's definitely
benefiting from the fact that he's on a Yamaha, which has really, really stepped their game up this year, but it's not just a bike. We're not going to go down that road again.
Yeah, yeah, I don't even need to get in there. The kid's doing great. That's the bottom line.
Yep.
Speculation aside, he's doing great.
Yep.
Still hate that lollipop. Still hate it.
It was great to see him on the podium, though, because he's just looked overjoyed, and like he was kind of what an offset to Danny, who usually just barely moves, and, you know, Jorge's leaping in the air.
Yeah, all for the PR machine.
Yeah, you know, whatever it takes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, results was he won. I can see Danny being unhappy about that. I've seen Danny happy when he's on the podium before, so.
But he doesn't dance.
Oh, my God, that was hideous. I couldn't tell at first. I thought, is he imitating the Kentucky
Nicky Hayden?
Kid?
I know, that's what I was thinking,
I was
too.
Like, what is this? But whatever, it was fun. And everybody had a good time. And there were a lot of Spaniards at the race. And I met some Spaniards at the Sunday night party after the race. That was pretty funny. They came up to me at the bar. And they're like, hey, you're this guy, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I'm that guy.
Cool.
We're from Galicia, which I guess is, you know, it's the closest part of Spain to Portugal is Galicia. I don't know. It seems like I get so much information coming in all the time. I don't even remember parts of my old life. I was thinking about how I'm going to rebuild one of my bikes, and I could barely remember how I put the engine together. I'm thinking, man, all this new information and all the old stuff's falling out. I hope it's like riding a bicycle, that when I get my hands back on it, it all comes back to me. But right now, it just seems so far away.
I believe that. My brother is a cognitive scientist, he always says, you don't lose anything. It's just, it's in there somewhere.
I hope. I hope. Might need some electroshock therapy, but anyway.
All right, listen. So I am running out of money here on Skype. I'm going to have to say goodbye. Anything else you want to say to listeners?
Definitely keep enjoying the races. I know that they're showing them at Ace Cafe at 14th and Mission every Sunday at around 3 o'clock. They take the Euro feed and they'll put it up on two screens. Kind of small, cozy little place that lets you smoke in the city if you want to smoke and have a beer and watch the race on a Sunday afternoon. That was always one of my more challenging things when I lived in the Bay Area, was finding a place that showed the races.
Yeah.
And as much as I like watching them live, I don't like the idea of having to get up and go anywhere on a Sunday morning. You know, I like to kind of meander around and go for my own ride, so it's nice to be able to have a place that shows it in the afternoon for those of you in the Bay Area. For those of you that aren't, I just want to apologize because I think that new MotoGP website needs some work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man, I can't believe that they released it.
I can't believe they turned the old site off. At least they made, like, you know, oldcrap.motogp.com, at least, you know. I miss all the stats.
Trials and tribulations. You miss all the what?
All the stats. You can't get the stats.
I heard
anymore.
The video quality went down too for some reason.
Oh, the last race was terrible. They had some kind of interleaving issue. Yeah, it sucked. Which basically made it impossible to tell whether the ground was wet or not. So like when we saw QP and, you know, and we were watching the 250 race and watching it, wondering like, hey, why are they going around so slow? Is it wet or is it not wet?
Yeah, it was really treacherous. It was just enough to make things slippery, but not enough to have standing water.
Yeah.
Anywhere. I really didn't like it.
We
I don't like
We couldn't
like
tell,
that.
Though, except when they went down the straight and finally you could see the little plume of water behind the rear wheel.
You didn't see droplets on the cameras?
Listen, dude,
anyway.
So thank you very much for making time. What's the deal with China? Are you going to be able to talk to us while you're there?
Maybe for a little bit, a couple of minutes here or there.
Okay.
That's the most expensive place I've ever been as far as like roaming cell phone charges is Shanghai.
Got it. Well,
I was there with a small group in 2005 for the race, and my buddy rang up $1,000 using his cell phone.
Jesus. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so,
let's not do that.
It's dangerous. But, I mean, send an email and we'll see what we can line up. Who knows? Maybe even we'll be able to do something through Skype.
Okay.
Which we would have done this time, but I lost my connection because this is Spain. And that's the only answer you need. You can just go, Spain. All right, definitely. Tonight, good dinner and maybe a little bit of party because it's just been cranking out tons of work this week and the last couple of months.
Good deal, man. Get some rest before you head out to China and maybe you should get one of those gas masks.
I'm pretty sure there was something I needed to say.
What?
What's today? 4/18. Oh, yeah, my dad bought a motorcycle.
Really? What's he on?
Yeah. After 30-something years, my dad picked up an LS650 Suzuki Savage. I don't know what they're calling it now, M40 or whatever, but it's a little 650 single,
mm-hmm.
single cylinder, cruiser style, low seat height.
I know exactly what you're talking about. That's sweet.
Yeah. I had one of those bikes back in, let's see, I had a 1988 model, and this would have been in 96. It was a few years old. The first thing I did was ditch the stock handlebars and put some Sportster handlebars on it. And then I chopped the tail off and I did a bunch of other, you know, relatively minor stuff in the grand scheme of things. But I really enjoyed it because I have an affinity for singles. And it's just a fun, easy little bike to get around on in Hawaii. My dad emailed me a couple of months ago, I don't know, 2 months, 6 weeks, something difficult to keep track, but he said, hey, I'm looking for a little commuter bike that doesn't suck a lot of gas because I'm sick of driving the truck around. So I just said, pick up a 650. If you see one, get it. So now my dad's cruising around riding, and it's nice. I mean, it's
good
to know
him.
That if I go to L.A., I've got another bike I can borrow.
Nice. That's good for him.
Yeah. So happy about that. Congratulations, Dad.
Indeed.
Ah.
Okay, man.
And man, how about that HP2? The more I look at photos of that thing on the internet, the more I go, damn, that's a spectacular-looking machine.
The what?
BMW's HP2 Sport.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know, the one that was in Daytona. Yep. What a good-looking bike.
It is actually a very good-looking bike.
The closest thing I've seen to the Moto Guzzi MGS01, which had a nice similar style.
Very interesting comparison. You're right. You're right. It has the same kind of like stealth kind
bikini, small fairing around the headlight.
Yeah.
You know, merges with the fuel cell area, tight little tail section, big engine hanging out. I mean, it could so easily be a Volkswagen motor stuffed in there. I got to say that MGS01 is a definite dream bike of mine. And I think that HP2 is a little bit more attainable, but man, that Guzzi was gorgeous.
Definitely.
I got to go online as soon as I get the internet backed up this afternoon. I got to go find the Getzy and Brian website. Those guys can do it right, too.
The what website? Sorry?
Getzy and Brian. GHEZZI/ Brian. They're a bunch of Guzzi customizers.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Good
definitely
photos online?
Check out their work, too.
All right.
You might as well link it up. It's a fun thing to check out.
Okay, I will.
All right. Take care, Jules. Take care, everybody. Enjoy
thanks,
the
Steve.
Races. What else? Yeah, no special shout-out to anyone. If I get a special shout-out...
Cold.
Out,
that's
email,
cold.
You know, sound clip. I'll email you a special sound. Shout-out to my girlfriend for always taking care of me.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. And the rest of you monkeys, go riding.
Ciao.
Okay, bye.
Okay, thank you, Liam, and we'll do it for the show today. I will be doing one more show next week, and then Bob should be back, and we'll have a little more enthusiasm on the show, I think. I'm recording this at between 5 and 7 in the morning on a Friday morning, just before work. So my apologies. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to the show, downloading it, all that kind of stuff. And tune in next week. We'll have another good show for you. And until then, be safe. Take care. Ciao.